And thank you for that edit. Glenn, you know, another one of your wonderful tracks. Linda, as the song was playing, my mind wandered back to your grandchild. I just can't help but think about that. That's such a wonderful thing to happen. Have you been able to spend time with them?
Yes, in fact, I have. I was with her just yesterday because they live in Chicago, which is very close to me. I live just outside of the city. And so I do get to see her quite a bit, and she is 6 weeks old now. So
what a grandmother she has! Are you looking forward to telling her about your adventures and every? And I mean, the history, my stars, to have you for a grandmother is like magic.
Well, you know, after she's done with medical school, if she wants to hear about show business, I'll tell her.
Oh, my. So there's no Madison Square Gardens for her?
No, I'm afraid not. Yeah, actually, you know, I think with both my children, though, I think the main thing is I wanted them to be happy doing whatever it is they chose to do. And, you know, my son, who, you know, I couldn't keep him clean for more than 10 minutes at a time. You know, I'd get him ready and say, stay out of the mud, and 5 minutes later he'd be covered in it. And now he's an archaeologist. So I get it, you know. They do what it is that's natural for them. And my daughter is a singer and an actress, and, you know, she's doing her thing in L.A.
Yeah.
So they're happy and they're healthy, and I really, as a mom, I couldn't ask for anything more than that. And that's what I want for her.
At 6 weeks, you can't really tell yet. I mean, they're not old enough to go digging and be an archaeologist.
Right. Not yet.
If she's fascinated by mirror balls, then we know.
Well, we could be in trouble if that turns out to be the case. But at this point, so far, she hasn't shown a great interest.
Well, I'm just delighted to hear that. That's such a wonderful event. It's good that you shared that with us. 6 weeks isn't very long to have arrived in this world.
No, not at all. And she's just a little peanut. She's darling. She's darling. So, you know, when I get out there and start working this new song, I'm going to bring a photo album, you know, all grandmas carry pictures. And, you know, the crowd will just have to look at my granddaughter's pictures. That'll be part of the show.
Well, if that's great. If you like, you can send some to the Strictly Confidential email address, and I'll post them as part of your calendar listing. I'd be glad to do that.
Well, you know, I just might do that.
Well, we'll post anything that the guests and the log. We're glad to do it. Linda, what was it like performing at Madison Square Garden? And how old were you? You were just in your 20s, weren't you?
Well, the very first time that I performed there, I think I was six. And I sang
You're
an Elvis
blowing me away.
Song. Yeah. And then... I think I was in my late 20s, actually, when I had the first hit record. And that was just amazing because I had grown up in New York and I had been to Madison Square Garden for shows and different events. And so to perform there and to perform at Lincoln Center, you know, that was just a dream come true for me. I think anyone... in the business, you know, you have certain areas and certain goals you may set for yourself. And that was just something that, you know, I would dream about. I think the one thing that I have not managed to really get out of my head, though, is theater. I am dying to do Broadway. I
really
would love to do that. So maybe that'll be my next conquest. I'll see if I can get myself on Broadway stage.
Well, I can see you doing something like that. In fact, in some of the material today, you actually teach stage presence at this point, don't you?
Yes, I do at
Louisville
University
about that.
In Chicago.
What is stage presence, and how do you teach it?
Well, you know, I'll tell you honestly, I don't know if you've seen this, but every once in a while you might end up seeing someone who's got maybe a fantastic voice, but they just stand there like a lump. And, you know, that's, you have to learn to perform. You don't just, you know, do it out of nowhere. It doesn't just show up. And I think that a lot of people, I was very fortunate in that I had that chance to study in the school that I mentioned earlier was called Charlie Lowe Studios. And Elliot Gould was a classmate. Barbara Streisand went there. And, you know, one of the things that they taught, they used to have a class. They had their tap, their ballet, modern jazz, drama. But at a certain time of day, you know, they would ring a bell and everybody would come to the center studio and they would do what they called personality classes. And whether you were there to study singing or not, you stood in line and you sang. And you, not only did you sing a song, but you performed the song. If you were singing a song about the sun, you couldn't be sad and gloomy. They wanted to see personality. And that's part of what I do. I think that it's so essential because you want your audience to feel what you feel when you're singing. And part of that is the actual performance. And it's crucial, I think. It's crucial. And there's a large group of people out there right now who have, you know, they'll have hit songs and they go out and they tour, but, you know, they don't touch their audience. And I think that's essential. I want to be close to them. I want to touch them with the words, with my movements, and with everything that I do while I'm on that stage. I think I owe it to them because they're there Wow. for me. So that's what I teach.
Well, that's and this is for Roosevelt University's Music Conservatory, and you're doing that now, aren't you? That's something, a current project?
Yes, I do that now, and I'm also still doing voiceovers and jingles, and, you know, I try to keep busy. You know, if you slow down, it's not good. You have to keep yourself going.
I'm just amazed at the number of the projects and the things that you have done. And not to mention being a songwriter. Now you're writing music for Chapel Music. Are you still writing new compositions?
I am. In fact, I don't know if you're familiar with the song that Martha Wash had out recently. I think she's still out there doing it. In fact, it's called "You Lift Me Up." I wrote that.
You wrote "You Lift Me Up." Now, that's interesting. I played something by Martha Wash recently on the show that she did. What was it? "Listen to the People." It was one of a track that she did. I'm afraid I don't know "You Lift Me Up." But I'm definitely going to have it before tomorrow night.
Okay.
I bet I hear it on the show. "You Lift Me Up." Now, when did you write that? And have you always been a gifted writer? Because people that are looking for your songs, I see a list here: Cher, Gladys Knight, Gloria Gaynor. These people could get songs. They probably get songs in the mail every day from people trying. So,
right?
Tell us about your gift. This is an amazing thing.
Well, I was fortunate. Gloria Gaynor's album or CD, I think it was called "You Wish Me Love." I actually had the first cut on that CD that I wrote for her. And, you know, I don't know about gifted, a gifted writer, but, you know, sometimes things just come to you, and I think it's essential. You know, I keep a pen and a pad by the bed, and sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night, something will happen, and I'll jot it down, and just to get an idea. And the song "You Lift Me Up" was, you know, I had been through some pretty horrendous times in my life. I've seen some wonderful, wonderful things, but I've also seen some very horrible things. And, you know, I just feel that there had to be someone who kept me above and kept me going. There was something there. And I wanted to write that down because you know, a lot of people need that, and you know, if you feel that there's someone behind you pushing you forward and keeping you going, then you might be able to accomplish a lot more. So I thought I would share it, and it was great that Martha liked the song, and she went in the studio and recorded it. So it turned out very well.
Now, Martha Wash was a background singer for who? Wasn't she? I'm lost. She was a background singer, I thought, for someone. I can't place who.
Sylvester.
Ah, Sylvester. Ah, that's it. Sylvester.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's it. Now it's all coming together in my adult brain. Yes. Sylvester.
Yeah,
that's
so funny because Martha and I met, I guess, in Italy. We were at the Venice Music Festival. Oh, good Lord, it had to be 29, 30 years ago. Oh, my goodness, I'm not that old. How could that be? But anyway.
That's correct, yeah.
We met at the Venice Music Festival, and we kind of, you know, we would see each other, and she was singing, at the time they were called Two Tons of Fun. You know, they were on vocalist for Sylvester.
I got the feeling.
We just hit it off, and we never lost track of each other. And all these years have gone by, and we still keep in touch. So that's
what
a
wonderful story.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing how you know, these incredibly talented people that we loved so much back in the 70s and the 80s, that talent just doesn't go away. You know, there's this whole top 40 thing that, you know, you hear it, that goes away. But the folks who are really gifted just continue to stay with us. Martha Wash is certainly one of those people, as are you.
She definitely is. She's such a talented vocalist and just a genuinely nice person. She really is.
Linda, if you could choose any song from all the songs that we have on loaded up at the studio, that we don't even have close to all of your music loaded up at the studio, but I think you have a list, what would be your favorite?
Oh,
we would definitely want to hit that.
Peter, how could you do this to me?
I know, it's a very evil thing for me to do, but it gets me off the hook.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, I can make some suggestions. Of course, we've got to hit Red Light before the night's out.
Oh, dear.
We've got to hit Bridge Over Troubled Water, but you must have some favorites that I'm not aware of.
Wow. Well, you know, I'll tell you, my husband's favorite is Still in Love with You.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I think we have that loaded
that
up there. Yes, we do have Still in Love with You. Tell us the story.
You do?
We just happened to have a copy of it loaded at the studio. What is the story behind this? Did you write this after you met him?
No, you know what? This is actually an Al Green tune. And Al Green had done it first, and it was from the very first album. And we were looking for material that, you know, felt comfortable and just felt right. And this just had such a beautiful groove to it, and it was so warm, and it was a nice song, and we both kind of fell in love with it. So that happens to be, and it's so funny because I'll get in the car with him, and he's got his iPod thing, and that's the first thing that plays.
I'll be darned.
You know, after 30 years, I'm like, what are you doing?
Oh, but Linda, you so deserve a man like that. After everything you've given to the listeners and the dancers and the DJs, you deserve a man like that. You really do.
Well, I'll
tell
you, he is pretty special. He's a wonderful, wonderful man.
What is his name?
His name is Nick.
Nick.
Nicholas, yes.
Nicholas. Well, then,
and we were friends for years before we ever went on a date. Just good friends. And he would call me up and tell me about who he was dating, and I'd call him up and, you know, we'd talk and we'd go to the movies and stuff. And never in a million years did I think that we would end up as a couple. And then something just happened. It just changed. And here we are, 30 years later.
Wonderful story. Well, then, Nick, this goes out for you, my friend. And the song is called Still in Love with You. Roll it, Bob.
Thinking about you, boy.
Well, Linda, I of course I had no idea you had done that track too. What a wonderful version that is.
Oh, thank you. Thank
well,
you.
I could certainly see why he keeps that in his iPod. What a great track.
Thank
what a great
you,
track.
Peter.
What does he think about the new grandchild?
Oh, he's gone. You know, he just celebrated a birthday last week, and of course he got a birthday card from his granddaughter that said to the number one grandpa, so he's over the moon now.
I'm sure that grandchild is going to be totally spoiled by Nick. You're going to have
rotten.
To intervene. So.
She's going to be rotten. I'm just warning the world now.
I'm sure that's his number one thought, and yours too. You know, you have a new grandchild. It's like that. That is all encompassing. Really, what a wonderful thing to happen.
It really is. In fact, I'm writing a song about it.
Really?
I am. I'm working on a song about it because, you know, I've got friends who have been grandparents for a while now, and they would bring out the photographs and talk about, tell stories, and they go, you just wait, you don't understand yet, you wait, when it happens to you, you'll see. And, oh my God, they were so right, because, you know, after a while, you're like, oh God, I can't look at another picture. And now I find that I'm the one, I mean, I go to the grocery store and I show the cashier pictures of the baby, so it is definitely different. And and warm and fuzzy and happy and great. So
it's wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
And so did you meet Nick actually when you were in your 20s? You said you were friends for an awfully long time. We're all curious about your life. Anyone who could make music as you do, we want to know every detail. You knew Nick back in your, did you know him in school, like in high school or?
No, actually I was I guess early 20s, maybe 21. And we were both playing nightclubs, and we met at the Chicago Playboy Club. And he was, my husband is a drummer, and he was playing in a room upstairs in the showroom for Minsky's Burlesque, and I was playing with my band downstairs in the living room, and it was pretty incredible. He said that he heard my voice as he was coming down the stairs, and he fell in love with me before he saw me.
Wow.
And I thought, ooh, this guy's good. Really good.
That's wonderful.
And I thought, oh, okay, you're cute, but, you know. But, you know, and then we just started talking, and our, you know, band members would go see his group and vice versa, and we just became friends. And then, as I said, it just changed one day. And I was the one who made the change because I got one of his ex-girlfriends showed up out of nowhere after, you know, not being around for a couple of years, and
and you the queen of sassy, did you destroy her in one look?
What? No, I was so quiet and shy. I mean, she showed up, and she was with this really tall, good-looking guy, and I didn't think anything of it, and then at the end of the evening, she sends him away, and it turns out this guy was her brother.
Oh, really?
She sends him away, and she says, I'm going to make Nick drive me home. And I thought, you conniving little she-devil.
Mm-hmm. Lord have mercy.
Exactly. But I didn't realize that what I was feeling was jealousy. I was really jealous. And so I thought, okay, I can either say something and risk losing my friend.
Yeah.
Or I cannot say anything and never know. I have to take the chance. And so I did. And, you know, of course, it was kind of great to find out that he was feeling the same way about me, and it was all turned out very well. So,
great story.
You know,
but, it would be wonderful if you had a story where you got up on the stage and you sang one of your songs and laid it to waste.
Yeah, well, that didn't happen, unfortunately. In fact, I wasn't even recording yet when that whole thing took place. So, you know, I didn't have the runaway love in me and the other thing. That hadn't happened yet. So, but now it'd be a whole different story. I don't even want to tell you what would happen to that girl if she showed up today.
No doubt. Well, Linda, it's a wonderful story that he said he fell in love with your voice. That's highly underrated, actually, because actually you're going to be listening to that voice for a long, long time.
That's very true. That is very true. And you know, he's just such a warm, caring man, and I just feel very blessed to have him in my life, and. You know, I almost let him go because I had such a terrible experience the first time out, you know, and he did propose to me, and I said no because Uh-oh. I was determined never to be married again. I just thought, no, not after what I've been through.
Not going to do it again.
No, not going to do it again. And he did ask me again, and I said, look, why don't we just live together? The nice little Catholic girl, you know. I'm like, no, I don't want to get married. Let's just live together. And he looked at me. Peter, this is so funny. He looked at me, and he said, I do not want to live with you. He said, I want you to be the mother of my children, and I want to die in your arms.
Oh, my God, Linda, that's so touching.
Oh.
Wow.
How could I say no?
You can't.
Is there any way to say no to that? I'm like, you want to die in my arms? Oh, my God. So we became engaged, and I guess we got married about 9 months later. And this November will be 30 years.
30 years this November.
Yeah.
My stars. You know, we have listeners that aren't 30 years old. You realize that?
I'll tell you, the thing about it is, you know, I think the friendship was such an important part of our relationship that, I mean, it just really solidified everything because even now, I mean, he is my best friend. We talk about everything. We do everything together. And people say, you guys, you work together, you travel together. Aren't you sick of each other? And no, we're not. We enjoy being with each other. And, you know, again, that's a blessing. It really is.
Well, it really is a wonderful story, Linda, and I couldn't be happier that is your story, your real story, because as I've said, the amount of love and just great fun and goodwill that I've experienced playing your music and the other DJs who've talked to you this evening and many others who are listening and have not called in. It is a story that I would want to hear from you.
Thank you so much.
Well, we've had some email requests for Red Light, so why don't we dedicate Red Light to that woman that showed up with her brother?
Okay, let's do that.
let's kick some skinny
butt. Because I'm ready to rock.
All right. Okay, Bob, if you'd roll, it's from Fame. It's the soundtrack of Fame. Linda Clifford doing Red Light.
I work so hard to get me a man. Don't try.
Linda, listening to that, my mind just it just boggles. You know, for so many people listening to Red Light, they will recall at the point that it came up in the movie called Fame. In my mind, though, I recall the dance floors and the people partying, and you know, because the song Red Light stands on its own so huge that it did not really need Fame. You know, Fame was an afterthought for the song Red Light. My goodness, did you write that?
No, actually, I did not. It was written by Michael Gore and Dean Pitchford, and Michael Gore is Leslie Gore's brother.
Oh, my stars. Leslie Gore. Was she It's My Party and I'll Cry If
That's
I Want To, lady?
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
My God, I'm not that old.
How about I remember it too, Peter.
Oh, Lord.
But,
they're going to cart us away.
Yeah, they actually wrote, the guys wrote all of the music for that film. And several other TV shows and just tons of other things. They were just great, great writers back in the day. They did a lot of stuff. And it was so incredible because Michael and I got to be really good friends, and he produced a couple of songs for me. But after I had done Red Light, he said, well, I want to get to know you, so why don't you come to New York and just hang out? And so I came to New York, and I spent about, I guess, a month. And we just talked about everything, and he got to know Nick and myself, and he wrote a song for me that was actually, I recorded it first, but then it was recorded by Whitney Houston, and I'm sure you know All the Man That I Need.
Yeah.
That was written about Nick and I.
Oh, my star.
How about it, huh? You know, you learn so many things when you listen. I mean, who knew?
My stars. Who knew?
So there's a lot of stories. But that song was written by Dean Pitchford and Michael Gore for my husband and myself.
My stars. I had no idea what... And Whitney Houston did that song. Yes.
Yeah, she did.
I'll be darned. Now that
I actually recorded it, I think, in 81 or 82? I think 81, right after the Fame soundtrack came out. It was on the same album as Shoot Your Best Shot, I believe.
Yes.
Listen to me, I can't even remember. But
I'm looking down the list. I can't figure out which album it was from, but I think you're right, yeah.
So, but that song was written for us. Isn't that special?
And then years later, here comes Whitney Houston.
Right.
And people finally get it. You know, they finally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Linda, what is it like waking up when Red Light was your first platinum, as best I can tell? Do you just wake up one morning, there's a telegram going, hey, lady, you got a platinum record. How does that work?
Well, you know, actually, what happened, I didn't realize that it was platinum. I was busy being pregnant and then delivering a child. So what happened was there was a knock at my door, and a delivery person handed me a box, and when I opened it, there was a platinum album inside.
Wow.
And that's how I found out. And if my friends could see me now, when that hit number one in Billboard, I mean, I was at home and I'm washing the kitchen floor, and the phone rings. And it,
no, tell me no.
Yeah, yeah.
You're washing the floor.
Okay, so the phone rings, and it's the president of the record company, and he says, I just called to tell you your song is number one this week in Billboard. And I thought, that was the cruelest joke anybody could play, and I hung up on him.
And it really was that Capitol you recorded that on?
That was also Kurt Tom through Warner Brothers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it was Warner Brothers.
You get the president of Warner Brothers on the phone, and you're like, yeah.
Yeah, sure, right, goodbye. And he called back, and he's like, no, I'm not joking. Your song really is. And I thought, oh my God, now what do I do? So it was, you know, that kind of a crazy, crazy time, but, you know, it was just great. I could not believe it. Couldn't believe it.
That's a wonderful story. I remember the first time I heard, if my friends could see me now, that your version, your the dance floor version, that I was in a club, and it was the first time I heard it. It stands out clearly. I absolutely fell in love with it. And then of course, immediately the next day, I was at the record store buying a copy of it and playing it myself. But if I'm not, did that, you were in the movie Sweet Charity with Shirley MacLaine. Did that song come from Sweet Charity?
It is originally from the show, yes.
I see. And is that, did that get, was that in the back of your mind when you redid this song? How did you come to do it? Because it's such a wonderful song, like, we've got to play it. But how did it come for you to do that?
You know, when we started looking for material to do the second album, first of all, we did, you know, the first album, Linda, and From Now On was kind of a hit, and nobody really expected that to happen, and we thought, oh, well, we have to come out with something else. And so we started looking for material, and one of the secretaries at Kurtom brought this song up, and I said, oh, we can't do that. That's sacrilege. You know, you can't take a show tune and turn it into a dance tune like that and put it...
Oh, no, can't do that.
Yeah, and I just thought, oh, no, we can't do that. Well, they went ahead and recorded the track, and so they called me and asked me to come in, and I heard the track, and I went, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, this is going to be great. And we did the song, and that turned out to be the title of the second album. And, you know, the rest is history, as they say. It was just an incredible thing. And even after, you know, they said, oh, it's number one, I ran out. I bought Billboard magazine. I had to see it for myself. And we did sort of a whirlwind tour, you know, just a promo tour, just going in and saying hi to all the DJs and thanking everybody for playing it. And I remember pulling up in front of Studio 54, and they took me up to the DJ area, and they put the song on, and people went nuts. And I thought, oh, I mean, this is something you just can't believe until you see it.
Oh, I can so see it, because I've seen a glimmer of it, not at Studio 54, but, you know, across the country in little Portland, Oregon. Yes, the floor goes nuts.
Really? And he said, this is the new national anthem. He said that to me. And I thought, the new national anthem? Wow! That's big.
Wow.
But it was just incredible. And, then I believed it. That's when I really believed it. I said, okay, well, it's actually happening.
Yeah.
And it was pretty much my last attempt at that point. I thought, well, maybe I should just be a school teacher and get the music because, you know, the biological clock is ticking and, you know, you want a life. And, things don't happen as quickly as people sometimes think in the music industry. You know, I remember doing so many TV shows and having people say, oh, an overnight sensation. You know, overnight, that took 25 years or something. So,
it's
very hard. It's very difficult. But if you persevere, you know, and if it is your dream and you keep forging ahead, you know, that's the key, to just keep going. And I was very fortunate, so it turned out to be a great song for me. Thank you, everybody.
Well, kids, hang on to your hats, because you're not heard Linda Clifford's version of If My Friends Could See Me Now, You're In for a Treat. And even if you're an old jaded DJ like myself, you'll still have a smile on your face. Bob, please roll If My Friends Could See Me Now.
Don't.
wow. Just wow. Linda, I wish you could see the chat room. It's an animated chat room. We have various animated icons, and there are John Travolta's with various DJs' heads substituted for John Travolta dancing. There are turntables, there are VU meters. I mean, it's a pretty strange chat room. I wish you could have seen it. They all went nuts.
I have to
ask you. One of the folks is saying that session must have cost a fortune, because if we're not completely wrong here, those are real horns and real players and probably real violins.
That's
what's
right.
up with that? It sounds like you had the entire Philharmonic there. What was the deal?
they definitely had a lot of the players from the Chicago Symphony in on that session. In fact, they did quite a few sessions for us. We used a lot of real instruments, and there's nothing like it. You know, when you go into a studio to record something and you've got real instruments backing you, it's just incredible. So, yeah, it did cost a fortune. It was pretty pricey.
Yes, but you know, considering the song, though, the subject matter, you know, it's talking about top of the heap, I've arrived, you know, that song deserves real violins and real horns.
You can't take a song like that and cut back. You know, you really have to present it the right way in order for it to be successful and to be out there the right way. So, you know, to try and do that and just, you know, use... what were they using back then? A Moog synthesizer or something, you know, of that sort, rather than real violins. It never would have worked.
It wouldn't have that feeling. And of course, there are people who play the synthesized instruments brilliantly, but nonetheless, that song would have to have real instruments to get
it. It really did need that. I don't think so. So I am very pleased at the way it turned out. I loved it. I enjoy doing that song so much.
Yeah, well, our producer points out you can't do that with a Casio, and he's absolutely
no, definitely not.
He just can't quite hit that. I have to ask, as long as we're on Sweet Charity, and this song was in Sweet, what was it like working with Shirley MacLaine? Was she a monster or a real nice lady? I mean, she plays both.
We had so much fun, actually, because we discovered that we had something in common by accident. I used to smoke a pipe.
Oh, I love it. Oh, dear Lord, are there pictures that survived?
I smoked a pipe. You know, I would pack a little tobacco in there and smoke a pipe. I promised my folks I would not smoke cigarettes, and they said, well, if you want to smoke, you can smoke a pipe. You can't smoke cigarettes.
Oh, but Linda, so fits the sassy singer. It so fits. For some reason, I'm not at all shocked.
So we would work on the film, and, you know, when they called a break, I would go over to a little area and have a smoke on my pipe. And one day, she came over and she said, can I join you? And she also smoked a pipe. And that started this little friendship for the couple of weeks that I worked on the film with her. And we would take our breaks together and just kind of hang out, smoke our pipe. So, no, she was not a monster. She was great.
Well, I really enjoyed
working with her.
Great to hear that, because she was so delightful in the characters that you just wonder, though, because there's such a span between Steel Magnolias, or what was the one she was on? Yeah, and some of the earlier ones. What was the story about the dysfunctional family and the astronaut? I've forgotten the name of that film.
Oh, dear.
But she ranges between really scary and really funny, and I didn't know where she actually fell in on that curve.
Terms of Endearment.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, your mind. Yeah, Terms of Endearment. She was a little scary there.
Yeah, she was, but she was great.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
She's a wonderful actress. She always has been, though.
Yeah.
Always.
Well, Linda, I have to tell you, you just have been an absolutely wonderful guest, just par excellence in every way, and I so very much appreciate your being on the show, and I know the listeners have. I've gotten such positive emails and people in the chat room, and I myself am floored And what a real, honest-to-goodness, wonderful person you are. You're just a delight to talk
to.
Well,
thank you so much, Peter. It was really my pleasure to be with you. And I really enjoyed it. And hopefully this will not be the last time that we speak. We'll be able to do
absolutely
this again.
Absolutely not. I definitely want to talk to you again.
Okay.
and because we think we've probably barely scratched the surface. One of the tracks I'm going to have Bob do is we'll only be able to run 2 or 3 minutes of it. We do want to hit Bridge Over Troubled Water, because that was your double platinum.
Correct.
That was right, and that was another tell, or maybe we'll run the full length Bridge Over Troubled Water tomorrow night. But in any case, folks, you're going to hear it whether we play a portion tonight or tomorrow. But what was it like with the double platinum? Did you get another telegram or a guy? Do you get like a guy with a fancy suit at the door? What happens with a double plat?
No, it's nothing fancy. Again, just a little, you know, knock on the door. Hey, I got a delivery, kind of thing. So,
well, is it a courier or is it just UPS knocks on the door?
It's UPS, no big deal.
That just blows me away.
How about
very
it?
Cash? Do you still have them, Linda?
Oh yeah.
Are they? They. That's amazing.
They are displayed.
Well,
those are my other babies.
Yeah. Well, let's again thank you so much, Linda, and thank you for being willing to come back and joining us again. You're absolutely delightful. We're going to run a couple of minutes of thank you. We're going to run a couple of minutes of Bridge Over Troubled Water, and then we'll fade that out in time for me to say goodnight to you folks. And Linda, thank you for being on the show.
Take care. Bye, Peter.
Thank you. Love you, sweetheart. Bye.
Thank you, darling. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bob, if you'd run a few bars of Bridge Over Troubled Water, and then we'll get out of here.
Yeah.
And my friends, what you have heard this evening is a real, live, honest-to-goodness diva. Now, that's what a diva is. Class from the very beginning to the very end. What a classy lady. What a wonderful conversation. And how delightful to have her on Strictly Confidential.